Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dan was here, but he had to leave. His wife called him.
Welcome, everybody, tonight. Can you hear me now?
No.
Can you hear me now?
No, yeah, ears turned off. It's not broadcasting any signal.
Here. Test, test, test. 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 They're not in the speakers? I don't know. Test. Test. Test.
All I get is a test.
Test. Test.
Okay. Your check was switched. You're not turned on.
It's green.
Do you have the right number?
Yeah, test, test. Yeah.
This one here.
Yeah, it's on five. Test. Looks right to me. Can you hear me now? Test. Test. Still can. Test. I'm not sure I hear it when I touch it.
Yeah.
Test. 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 What's the matter? Oh, yeah. That's all right. Test. Now can you hear it? Test. Test.
Well, some people hear it.
Test.
Others don't.
Test. Yeah, it looks like everything's right here. Test. Can you, everybody out here over the speakers? Is it on the speakers right now?
Yes.
Okay. Test. One, two, three. Test. 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 One, two, three. Test. One, two, three. Test, one, two, three.
It's not showing at all.
One, two, three, test.
It's over the speakers of it now.
Test.
It is, but it's not even like, it's not like
I switched these.
It's not like
this is what I was using.
Well, I know, this is
yeah, it's working.
It's not showing the light up on the
end. Test, test.
This is not.
Okay, we'll take a 5-minute recess then. Test. You getting me now? Test. You got me? Okay. Still have me?
working.
Are we okay? Can you hear that one, Mr. Crozier? You can hear it? Okay. All right, we'll come out of recess then. Thank you. Okay, we'll do roll call. Dan Deaver had to leave all of a sudden. He's going to try to make it back. So we'll excuse Dan right now. Do I have a problem with the council on that? Do I have a vote? In favor, say aye, I guess, or I need a motion.
I'll make a motion to excuse Dan.
Okay.
Second.
Second by Ken. Okay, first by Ken Johnson. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, great. That passes then. Okay. Next will be citizen input. And each person wishing to address the council shall state her or his name, an audible voice, into the recorder, which is this mic right up here. And please give us your name and address, and I'll allow up to 5 minutes. And if you wish more, please stop just before five, I'll let you know. And you can ask the council for more times if you'd like to. Okay, who would like to address the council? Please raise your hand. Okay, Sean?
Mayor and council, for the record, my name is Sean Bates. I live at 1156 East Juniper Street in Othello. A couple things. First, I take issue with council's recent ordinance to allow votes on items at council workshop meetings. I have a concern that by implementing this, the council is edged toward violating due process for the community. In my opinion, the new OMC you created cuts the public out of the decision-making process. Since the implementation of this ordinance, there has not been any room at the beginning of the council workshop meeting agendas for citizen input. That violates the due process rights of the citizens. I would ask that the public at least have the opportunity to speak at workshop meetings as they have at regular council meetings, because that's what you've created here, is an additional regular meeting. I'm not persuaded there's really a workshop meeting anymore. Number two, on tonight's agenda, I see that Mr. Bailey is presenting a proposed change to Othello Municipal Code 1102 to strike the clause which says that all monies generated by the 1/2 cent optional tax go to the street program. The question is, how does gutting the provision of OMC Chapter 11, which devotes all the money generated by the 1/2 cent optional tax, help the street program? Be advised that if this body breaks good faith with the citizens of Othello and approves the proposal presented tonight to remove the exclusive designation that Othello Municipal Code Chapter 11 provides for the funding of our street program, that I will be at the head of the charge to repeal the 1985 1/2 cent optional tax on the November ballot. At the TBD meetings, charts generated by staff were exposed by the president of the Chamber of Commerce as illegitimate, specifically the figure of $460,000 inserted since 2007. In my opinion, the handling of these 1/2 cent optional tax dollars have been treated like a giant shell game, just going in circles. And to approve staff's request to change Othello Municipal Code Chapter 11 is actually a request for a political whitewash of the misappropriation of tax funds designated by law for the specific purpose of funding the street program. I am asking council not to follow this proposal rendered tonight by Mr. Bailey for the following reasons. First, the wording in OMC Chapter 11 was written back in 1985 after a very contentious and spirited battle of wills between the people and the council. At that time, this chamber was filled with hundreds of citizens because our city streets had serious problems. This ordinance was written by a council which included leaders of commerce and industry, a chief consulting engineer for Hanford, and an ordained minister. Because local streets are primarily the responsibility of our town to pay for, with a little help from the state or federal government when available, the council of 1985 made the OMC Chapter 11 ordinance to dedicate all the money from the 1/2 cent optional tax to the street program with those specific provisions and prohibitions, not just a wimpy resolution. Students of history and those who actually lived here at the time testify the council almost had this tax taken away by an initiative drive, and they missed it by just 2 votes. Second, as you can see from the information I had just handed you, which is directly from the Washington State Department of Revenue website, I am of the opinion, after we all learned at the TBD hearings that council held back in the spring, and as we see in the preparatory notes for tonight's meeting, starting 5 years ago, part of the 1/2 cent tax has been illegally diverted to the general fund above the $460,000 amount. According to calculations based on information from the Washington State Department of Revenue website, the sum of monies above the $460,000 per year was in excess of $667,000, though in a five-year span from 2007 to 2011. Mr. Bailey's chart called it Street Fund Actual, which is in fact just an arbitrary number for budgeting purposes, not actual dollars received from the tax. Tonight's paperwork submitted by Mr. Bailey says second one-half sales tax deficit down here on the bottom. And that's what I'm referencing here. What he's calling a deficit is actually the surplus amount of money actually rendered to Othello in excess of the imaginary $460,000 amount for each year over the five-year span from 2007 to 2011 used for budgeting purposes. It shows what I'm talking about, an amount over the past 5 years of $667,465.29 that is by law supposed to be used for streets in Othello. Any deficit is imaginary. We are actually looking at a surplus beyond the sum of $460,000 each year. As we all know, the Othello Municipal Code defines the duties of the administrator to include the formulation
Excuse
of an annual
me, Sean,
budget.
You have 20 seconds to wind it up.
Thank you. And can I have the 30 seconds you took from me at the TBD hearing, too?
No, I don't know what you're talking about, but okay.
Yeah, you shorted me then. As we all know, the Othello Municipal Code defines the duties of the administrator to include the formulation of an annual budget, along with help from city finance officer before approval by the council. The annual sum you're wanting a TBD to make up for is very close to the amount that's
been
diverted.
You're done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I ask that this entire text and my comments be included in the written minutes of the meeting, not just a cursory mention that I presented a document, but also include the whole text in the meeting minutes as allowed by law.
Okay. Anybody else would like to address them? The council will not respond, so you know we'll send letters out where it needs to be sent to. That is a policy of the council, so that's why the council does not respond, just so you understand. Oh, did you hear me at all? No? Can you hear me all right, Lyman? You can hear me?
I can hear you, but what did you say?
Okay. So the citizens know the council do not respond to these. We'll send a letter out to the citizen if there's a need to respond. So like a statement like that or something. So we've gone over this repeatedly. So anyhow, who would be like to address the council? Okay.
Go ahead.
Mr. Lyman? Go ahead.
My name is Jerry Lyman. I live in 907 East Lutz. Lived in that location for 47 years. Kind of remember voting on that 1985 half a percent tax for the streets. I don't really, Sean pretty well covered a lot of what I was going to talk about. There is a couple of things that I would like to know. I'd like to know under what authority, which RCW, or what authority the council has the right to change an ordinance that was a voter-established tax. I'm sure there must be a right. I tried to find that information at the City Hall. They did give me some information, but I don't see that in here. So that's one thing. Perhaps when the administrator talks, he can fill us in on that. I'm sure you would like to know, too, whether you have the right to do this or not. Two, I'm opposed, and I've talked to quite a number of people, to changing the half-cent gas tax ordinance under the general fund. To me, it's very simple. It makes an open checkbook for government to spend any way they wish that money. And what is dedicated now for streets, it has to be spent for streets. And once it's under the general fund, it may not be this administration, it may be 20 years from now, but somebody is going to say, gee, we got to do this, and we have the money here to spend. We'll find some other way to do it for the streets. So it's something to think about. I worked 30 years for the game department, and I know it was a game fund is how we were financed. There was a number of state legislatures that really would like to got the game fund under the general fund so they could have spent the game department's money in other ways. So actually, I'm no stranger to that. It's happened a couple of times in my career. Never happened, incidentally. The other thing is, you take a dedicated fund for streets and you want to change it so it can go into the general fund. Right now, you can use money out of the general fund along with a dedicated street fund for the streets. You do that, but on the other hand, you want to establish a TBD, which is dedicated to streets again. Now, this to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, why do away with one and then create another one? The only thing I can see, and I don't know, is maybe there's some reasoning I haven't heard, because I never attended the First Consul meeting here about it, but I guess it just opens a checkbook to government to spend it any way they wish. So we're totally opposed to that. Not only I, but I've talked to a number of people, and they all felt the same way. They think the money should be spent for what it was intended to be spent for. The TBD, the only thing I have to say is this. I attended both public meetings and listened to the testimony here before the council. Most people were opposed to the TBD to start with. However, it turned out that if one was to be established, that they really, it was 100% consensus, the way I saw it in this room, that it would be for the 0.2% gas tax, or not gas tax, but tax instead of the $20 license fee. Probably in the end, that would be the best situation, probably make more money for the city than the license fee, because it would involve everybody from out of town that comes into our town and purchases anything if they paid that tax. So I just kind of want to remind the council that that's what I heard, and I assume that's what you folks heard too. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Crozier.
If you look at the viewers, you probably can see what I want to talk about better.
Could you give us your name and address, please?
Just a second. Let me get arranged here.
Okay.
I still have a little problem with my hands and stuff. So I have some questions about this TBD. And
Mr. Crozier, would you give us your name and address, please?
Oh, my name is Michael R. Crozier, and I live at 625 11th Avenue North in Othello here, where I have been a resident for about 40 years. I have some questions about this TBD and the movement of money in the street fund. What values gained for the citizens? I think that should be important. Next. You'll see this document was originally tendered to us as a be-all, end-all for the street program. And you notice that up here at the top, we've calculated that there was 660 some odd thousand dollars missing from that. Next. Previous to that, we received this as an argument. And it does also show $460,000 down at the bottom. Next. So what this is a systems analysis. We use this in industry to figure out what's really going on in the system. As you'll notice, we have an optional half-cent sales tax. And the approved path by the citizens was to go to a residential street fund for street construction. Granted, the OMC says residential and commercial streets. But if you go back and look at the newspapers of Mr. Johnson and Mr. Garcia took a look at, you'll see that it only talked about dedicating it to residential funds, which was its original intent during the discussion. Next. Oh, and so, excuse me, go back. So I want to point out that one loop in this thing, can you go back?
I don't know how to go back. Just hit the back button.
Hit the back button. I hope I'm not being dinged for this time-wise. If you notice, this pathway here, okay, down through here, is not only prohibited by your adult municipal code, but by this group, RCW. And it makes it a crime to divert those funds to some other purpose. So my question is, why and what value occurs when we run this money around in a circle? Because you said you take it out of this fund, and then you supplement it with other money here in this thing and put it back in the fund. That's been the argument all along. Next. So why in 1985 did we direct the funds to the street fund? Well, we chose to tell the citizens exactly where their tax money was going, what we wanted to do with their taxes. We were not going to put them into this nebulous general fund that's like the black hole that absorbs everything and you don't see anything come out of it. We wanted the citizens to know what we were collecting for that fund as well. Next. Well, why were the funds diverted? We've never been told that, and we've asked for a flow sheet that shows all the funds going in and all the funds coming out and where they're dispersed since November. And what was the need? What was the need for diverting? Was there a cash flow need? We don't know. And we would like to know the answers to these questions. Next. What are you saying to the citizens if you take and take these controls off this money? Are you saying you need more money because you diverted their funds for a non-proved purpose? Or we're not smart enough to keep our eye on the funds ourselves? What are we saying here? Next. You need to remember as you consider this that this is an optional tax. We the people can take this away whenever we want. We can tell you what to do with it by initiative. And you were told by a threatened initiative what to do with it previously, and it's worked since 1985. And you add additional money to it. So why would you take why would you change it? If it's not broke, don't try to fix it. Next. So why change it now, except to cover up misdirected funds by perjured testimony before councils.
You got 20 seconds, Mr. Crozier.
Excuse me?
You have 20 seconds. Well, less than that now.
Good. So the last thing I want to show you is this little chart right here. Keep going, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Crozier.
Good.
I appreciate your time.
I would like to point out that what you're asking for in your TBD is 2.5 times more money than your original told us you needed.
Anybody else like to address the council?
I would.
Okay, go ahead.
My name is Bob Russell. I live at 850 Larch. I've lived there since 1974. So I well remember voting for the 1985 street levy, tax, whatever it was, to fund our streets. And Mr. Lyman and Mr. Crozier were right that it was pushed mainly for residential, and although the commercials slipped in there somewhere. I don't know how many of you people voted for it, but I did, maybe two up there. But if you have the legal means to change the will of the people in this vote, if you have the legal means, you may be able to do it, but it isn't right. Repeal it if you don't want to do it, and that's all.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, I want to thank everybody for coming and sharing. Okay, we're going to move on to, do I hear a motion for the approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Charles first, Ken Kaler second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay. Do I hear a motion for the consent agenda?
So moved. I'll second.
Mark Snyder first. I have a second. Charles second. Okay. Any discussion?
I have to abstain from that portion related to items to Johnson's Glass and Doors.
Okay. All right. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, then that passes also. Okay, current business. 4.1, Kevin Lindsley. Lindsay, discussion of well 9 site. Kevin?
Before, I did not bring posters. I joined the 21st century finally. Although I have them in the truck if you want me to get them out. Okay. What I want to do, first off, my name is Kevin Lindsay. I'm a hydrogeologist at GSI Water Solutions. My colleague Terry Tolan and I have put this together. This is our prognosis or prediction for Grant Osborne and you guys as to what we think may or may not be going on with respect to groundwater supply conditions at the proposed well number 9 location out east of town. What I want to do tonight is very briefly summarize what our deliverable to GNO will be saying in a few days when I actually sit down and write out the tech memo with the graphics that go with it, some of which will be what you see tonight. So with that, let's go forward into the prognosis. So what do we think's going on out there? First off, a few wells, what does that mean? Well, that means when we do a prognosis, we use everything we can get our hands on from surrounding wells in the surrounding area to define or identify where we think water production may or may not be in the subsurface. Around the well 9 location, there are very few deep wells to work with. The nearest wells essentially being well 8, city well 8, which is a mile or more away. The Port of Othello's new well, which is several miles to the east. City well 6, which is several miles to the west. The McCain deep well, which is several miles to the west. There's not a lot of deep well data out in this area to work with, so that's what the few wells comes from. The other thing we have to work with is what monocline and dikes are all about. You've heard me talk about some of this. This is the regional hydrogeologic subsurface material that we've put together through Columbia Basin WAMA over the years. And from all that, we can give you a prognosis or prediction. This graphic pretty much is one version of that. This is the new 2 scale, although with a huge exaggeration. Here's Highway 17. This is a west to east line through the subsurface. I'll go back and forth for everybody's benefit. A west to east cross section through the subsurface showing what some major geologic features we think are in the presence of the subsurface and where water production might be. Othello Well 6, Othello Well 8, Highway 17, the proposed new location, and then the new port of Othello Well over here. A couple of things to keep in mind as we do this west to east transect, west to east, again, 6, 8, the port well, and then the proposed new location just to the east of the highway. A couple things to keep in mind with this cross-section. You'll see these patterns, these kind of bluish, whatever that color is, it's blue and white. That is where available records tell us water exists in the subsurface. We plotted those on this cross-section, so we have those for reference. And then the colors are the different major geologic layers that lie in the subsurface out here. Since groundwater occurs at the tops and bottoms of the layers, we want to portray some of those layers on here so that we have a clue as to where water production may or may not be at the new well location. Also notice a couple things about these layers. At the port, the top of Grand Ronde, very important horizon for y'all, lies about 750 feet below ground surface at the new port well. It's actually, that well is a Grand Ronde case, a Grand Ronde well. All one of them is cased and sealed off. That's good from your guys' perspective. Come to town, though, the top of Grand Ronde is much deeper. We know that because of the building records we have for the city's wells. So So a very big difference between where the top of Grand Ron is east of town and where the top of Grand Ron is in town. That's important for your guys' perspective because, if I understand your water rights correctly, you can take one of them water, which is the water above the Grand Ron. That's this blue, green, brown, whatever that color is, whatever that lovely color is, the green, the brown, the orange, the brown, and those other awful colors. That's where you can take your water from based on your available water rights. You cannot go into the Grand Ron to get your water. That's my understanding of what the water rights say. From your perspective, that's probably okay from a depth of well point of view because top of Grand Ron in town is about 1,200 feet down, whereas, again, at the port, it's only 750 feet down. There's some other issues tied to that. We'll touch on those briefly in a little bit. But that's kind of what the thing is as far as where you can get water. Now, you notice in this cross-section, significantly different thickness to top of Grand Ron here versus top of Grand Ron there, where, there. That's very important for how to figure out what this well is going to do, and I'll get into that in a minute. We want to keep that, this line in mind. And you'll see this cross-section again with some annotation on it where I have to make that point. But anyways, there's a predicted well. Right now, top of Grand Ron at that location may be about 1,000 feet down, although as I talk about it in a few minutes, I'm going to give you the range of possibilities for where the top of Grand Ron would be. That'll be as deep as that well can go. Again, based on what I understand your water rights will allow you to do. Let's go to the next one. So just to backtrack a little bit, the importance of dikes and the monocline that's out there, basically those are subsurface features that can typically, in the basin, affect the distribution and occurrence of groundwater. The dikes, this cartoon here, these photographs here, the photographs, the cartoons. Basically, Columbia River basalts, what we're dealing with are volcanic rocks erupted from the earth. Those volcanic systems are fed by dikes. The dikes are vertical features that cross-cut our basalt flow layers. That vertical feature, since water is found in the tops and bottoms of these layers, that vertical feature disrupts the continuity of that water. When you talk about groundwater, you talk about upgradient to downgradient. What goes on with a vertical feature like that is it commonly forms a barrier or a hindrance to groundwater flow, separating the upgradient water from the downgradient water. This is important for well 9, and I'll get to that in a minute. This is a photograph of that dike system I'm going to talk about at well 9. It's actually outcrop down the Snake River. It's totally geologically cool, but we won't go into that. I'll control myself. Next slide. Okay, monocline, the other feature we have to worry about at the well 9 or in the area of the well 9 location. I shouldn't pick on the well 9 location. This is just the stuff that goes on between Othello and the port. Monocline is a fold in the layers, and this is a cartoon picture showing what it is. Basically, the layers come along, they flex, and then they fold down and take off, going off in another direction. So that's the monocline fold. It's not like a big arch fold in anticline like the Saddle Mountains and the Frenchman Hills and all that. It's kind of a ramp fold. But what happens with monoclines commonly is because the rocks are folded, that means the layers, that the tops and bottoms of the layers are folded. And if you've ever gone out to the outcrop, out in the field with us crazy geologists, we'll show you the vesicular basalt with all the holes in it. Say, that's where the water lives. What happens in these folds is those holes get destroyed. And so, in some cases, these folds start again forming upgradient to downgradient, have upgradient to downgradient effects on groundwater flow and occurrence. Upgradient to the fold, water production is commonly better than downgradient to the fold. Okay. Next slide. So I think that's done. I'm done with hydrogeology 101. Now, back to this cross section and our location at well 9. You'll notice, again, top of Grand Ron. There is a monoclinal fold somewhere along Highway 17, just to the east of it, going to the west of it, that by the time we get to the port, at the port well locations, that monoclinal fold has taken a very shallow top of Grand Ron, we dropped it about 400 feet elevation deeper. So we know we have a fold somewhere out here in the area between the city's wells and the port's wells. The big question is, where does well 9 sit in, on, or to the side of that fold? In this cartoon, I just show you some of the horizons. If well 9 is to the right or to the east of the main part of the fold, that might be good for the city because these Wanapum layers up here will be shallower than what this cross-section shows. Basically, this line corresponds to that line. This dashed line corresponds to that line. If the fold geometry is shaped like this, it's actually putting your contacts higher, so you may hit them earlier, which could translate into 50 to 200 feet less drilling, which is very important from a cost perspective. If you don't have to drill a 1,000-foot hole, you may end up drilling an 800-foot hole. That's going to save you a few dollars. So that's one thing about this monoclinal fold. What if the fold is over closer to town versus closer to the port? Next slide. Puts the fold closer to the port. And you can see the cartoon here now. I just took that same line and just flipped it for you, showing you if the main flex on the fold is east of the proposed well 17, or well, highway 17, well 9 location. That then puts the well on, now back to up gradient, down gradient. This part of the country, up gradient's here, down gradient's here. But this configuration, the well is down gradient. The well is down gradient to the fold, might lead to poorer production potential. And as the cartoon says here, if fold is to the east, the units will be deeper, which means you may have a couple hundred feet more drilling to do. And the water production will more than likely be a whole lot like well number 8. Not bad, not great, but if that fold is further to the east, then we can predict where it is right now. We may see a well that's very similar to well number 8. In the previous slide, where I move that fold further to the west, it makes those units shallower, and if you use some of the things we've seen at Moses Lake and along the canal system, the East Low system just to the east of us, sometimes those shallow units can be fairly prolific producers of relatively good water if they have some recharge pathway tied to the canal system. That would be if the fold is to the west of the well 9 location. If the fold is to the east of the well 9 location, we're going to look a lot like well 8. Fold to the west of the well 9 location, you may get lucky and may hit some pretty good water. Next slide. Back to the dikes. This one just don't come out very good. If you squint here, is it on your screen?
Sorry.
Awesome. You see these vertical lines down here in the bottom of the graphic, there and there. Those are the positions. Those are predicted possible positions for the dikes. Describe what the dikes do. Again, with respect to well 9, the dikes are very important because if the dikes are subgradient of well 9, it's going to mess up production potentially in the lower part of the well. If the dikes are down gradient or to the west of the well line, then you don't have to worry about it so much. But that's still very important for the lower part of the hole because this dike system is in the lower part of the hole, or in the lower, potentially in the lower part of the potential hole. One final thing associated with the dikes do feed a volcano. That orange layer is the layer that is the volcano is in, and we have seen places in the basin that when you get lucky and drill into that thing, you have all kinds of vesicular rock and it'll make water if water's present like crazy. I'm not going to tell you what's there, but we know we're close to the volcanic system. We know we have dikes. There is a potential you could hit a really good water producer in that deep orange colored zone, which is the Ginkgo, which is 700-800 feet down. Let's go to the next one. Wrapping up the prognosis. This is the end of the prognosis, actually. I told you I'd be quick with this. So I've shown you a lot of cartoons, shown you a lot of maybes, and maybe the fold's here, maybe the fold's there, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, whatever. Basically, at the end of the day, there's a table. This table are the depth predictions for the deeper target possibilities. Then that would be, this would be what you're going to see in a well that's somewhat more like well 8 than not. Top of Grand Ron down here at 1,000 to 1,100 feet. foot range, all your water producing targets then, Priest Rapids 215 to 255, Quincy Interbed 255 to 260, Rosa Valvel 265 to 525. The bottom of the Rosa might be a very good producer at 525. And then some other units, I'll have to read all these off. They'll be in the tech memo when we get it done in a few days, and it's in your presentation, so you have this table. But basically, if the folds and the dikes sit, if my orientation is correct, sit east of the well 9 location, these are the depths you're probably going to see. If that feature sits west of the location, you can make these about anywhere from 100 to 150 feet shallower. So I'm giving you a range of targets. Top of Grand Run, the bottom of the hole will be somewhere between 800 and 1,000 feet down if you have to go that far. First good production in this well will be somewhere between 400 and 500 feet down, depending on where you hit all the stuff that may or may not be present. We just know what's out there because all the data we have says it is. We just don't know exactly where it's at. And then you'll have multiple targets between that about 500 foot depth range and that one up on TD, somewhere between 800 and 1,000 feet down. So those are the depth targets. There will be water there. Again, though, depending on where you're at relative to these features, you may end up with a well like well 8. It'll be a 700-800 gallon a minute well. It may have fluoride in the bottom. If you're on that side of the dike system into the top of a Palouse Falls unit, that is the fluoride producer. That is something to keep in mind. If you're on the east side of all this stuff, things may be shallower. Things may be very productive. May not be, too. So sometimes that's just tied to local conditions, and I can't predict that right now. So, recommendations then, with pilot, without pilot. I know you guys are thinking pretty hard of going without a pilot well. If you asked me, which I will put in the memo, I'll recommend a pilot well. And a pilot well is an 8-inch diameter hole. You drill it down, you test it while you're going, you figure out where everything's at, and then when you're done with that, you think you know what you're doing, then you ream it out, put in your production casing and seal, open that thing up, and away you go. You don't want to do a pilot, that's fine too. If you decide to not go with a pilot, I'm going to recommend, and I'll put these both in the memo, I'll recommend a casing and seal of an oversized hole. Normally, you'd probably drill it 20-inch down, build a 16-inch casing, drill out a 16-inch casing at 15 and something, although you could go a little bit smaller. Maybe you shoot for a 12-inch open hole. I'll leave that guy all up to you and Larry and the gang at G&O. But if you decide, which if you had a pilot in the ground, you'd size it all out based on the results of the pilot. If you don't, if you decide not to go with the pilot, I will be recommending a 400 to 500 foot minimum casing seal depth, oversized, and I'm saying oversized because this thing right here, which is only may only be a foot thick, in parts of this area can be 10 to 15 feet thick. It's an interbed, it's a clay, and if you set and seal casing above it, what you want to do to get the water at the bottom of the Rosa, which has a history of very good production. So you don't want to case that off, you want to be open to that. But if you then drill through this Squaw Creek interbed and it turns out to be a 10 or 15 foot clayey mess collapsing into your hole, all of a sudden you've got a construction problem and you may want to have been oversized so you can go in with a downsized liner to seal that thing off and get some production above it and more production below it. If something like that is left open to the hole, it may be a continual dirt generator for a number of years until you either mine it all out or you get sick of fighting with it and go back in and reline the hole. So I would recommend going on a pilot because I think there's enough uncertainty here that I can't tell you if it's going to be an 800 foot hole or a 1,000 foot hole. That's 200 feet of drilling, but right now I'm not sure where it's going to fall out at. If you decide to go with the non-pilot or go with the no pilot approach, I've got a pretty hard recommendation of where to put that first string of casing. But also, and I've talked to Larry Julius about this, talked to him about flexibility for unexpected conditions. If you go without a pilot, I would strongly recommend that the contract with the driller accommodate uncertainty so that the driller has some options to work with you guys and you guys have some options to work with the drillers. I would recommend a variety of checkpoints during drilling. You'll go back to those cross sections I had up. I would suspect within the first 300 to 400 feet, we will know if we're on one side or the other of that fold I'm worried about or not. And that starts bringing certainty into the picture. But when you're drilling a 20-inch hole, that's an expensive thing to be certain or uncertain about, which is why I lean towards the pilot approach. That being said, a non-pilot approach is very doable, but you need to pay, I think, a lot of attention to how you contract that out with the driller. And, you know, Larry and I, I'm sure, will be talking to you about that down the road on some stuff to have in that contract that protects you guys as well as makes it reasonably affordable, or as affordable as a 16-inch hole in the ground in the Columbia River Basalt is nowadays, which is a few $100,000. They ain't cheap holes in the ground. Yeah, I know. 700 grand and higher. So these are non-trivial exercises, which I think if you do the non-pilot approach, having good contractual control and good checkpoints in that contract will be very important to you guys. So you'll get a, well, Larry Julius will get this written up in a few, well, I'll write it, I'll send it to him. You guys will have it in a week or so. What is my birthday next Friday, next Monday, so I'm not writing next Monday. I'm 55. Still alive. But you'll get that on the tech memo in the not too distant future. I'll lay out both pilot and non-pilot options and, you know, go from there. Any questions?
Questions by the council?
So your recommendation would be pilot hole.
My given uncertainty, and, you know, I'm just the way I think, you can do it either way. I would like to, it's not my money I'm spending, it's your money. I would like to eliminate uncertainty early. I think we can do that easier with a pilot approach, because it's not, the hole's not going to be abandoned. I mean, it's going to be an 8-inch, and then you'll just go in and ream it out. Just take your time and effort in that 8-inch hole, figuring out, do I have water? Where are the contacts? Am I on the right side or the wrong side of this stuff? You'll find out quicker what your potential production targets look like. And, you know, quite frankly, go no-go. I mean, that's something you all need to think about is, when I'm at 600 feet and all the contacts line up with a bad scenario, do we really want to keep going, or does it take what we got to be done with? So I lean towards the pilot approach. That being said, the non-pilot approach is very doable with, again, I'll emphasize this, good contractual controls with your driller. Because there's going to be checkpoints during that. You really need to pay attention to it. You know, if you've got Larry and I out there, or our guys out there keeping an eye on things, and you'll be paying for our time to do that. Because with the sizes involved, these 16-inch holes, 20-inch holes, whatever you end up going with, I mean, that's some hundreds of dollars a foot, and you don't want to get that wrong, you know, two-thirds of the way through. So it's doable. I think you have to put more contractual controls on it. But I would, you know, in my world, what I recommend pilots, because I mean, just bring it. Pilots go on and I say, yay, here's your targets, I go away. With this, we really, with a non-pilot approach, we really have to pay attention, because in a sense, there's no second chances. So that's how I can move. They're both doable. I'm not sure what the cost differentials are. I have not costed them out.
Oh, go ahead.
We're kind of juggling this.
No, I know.
And whatnot. You're the same as you are, you know.
Juggle this.
Magic wand out there.
Yeah.
Say we went with a pilot hole, mm-hmm. and we go down to this 500-foot level, and we basically say that we do not, we're not past that dike level.
Right.
Would that be a wise way to go to see what we've got down there before?
Actually, doing a pilot partway down, deciding, hey, I think we're on it, then back off the pilot, ream it out, and you're like, would be a good way to structure the pilot. You don't necessarily have to take the pilot to the bottom.
Right.
But you won't get, you know, my recommendation again, I would have a pilot for starters, probably go halfway down to make sure we're on track with which prediction is coming true, A or B, the better one, the worse one, the deeper one, the shallower one. Because, you know, if we get good rows of production at 500 feet, we'll know it in a pilot, and we may decide not to worry about going to 800 or 1,000. May not not need to, but I think your target is what, 750 or something on this thing. You may decide to go partway in entrenchment and, you know, declare victory, call it good. Like, you know, that the thing about pilots is pilots pay for themselves in a negative sense. Pilots prevent big failure. If it's going to work, then you all ask yourself, and I ask myself, what do you pay for that for? You know, that's the problem with juggling the pros and cons of pilot versus non-pilot. I've been on holes, if we'd run pilots, we would have saved $1 million. I've been on holes, I don't know why we bought it. Hey, we were right, great. Let's go to the real hole now. So it is that juggling act that's really, you guys are in a sense buying certainty, reducing uncertainty using the pilot approach. The other one will work. Pilot, I think, buys a little bit more. It costs a little bit more. And that's something I've got to tell you, I'll spend my money.
Okay, any other questions from council? Amy?
Kevin, you said twice, I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money. But was your money, besides the issue of the pilot hole, which I understand, would you drill here?
Would I drill here?
Do you believe there's water there?
Oh, if there's water there, the problem is how much and what quality. And that's just back to tie to that whole position thing. If it looks like, well, hey, because it's far enough over, you will have a fluoride problem, and you'll have you actually have the hole you want, a 750-gallon hole. So if that's your target, maybe the pilot isn't as necessary. The location itself, the problem with location is I don't know exactly what's there. You will find water. It's a question of how deep, how much, what's the quality. It's there. And then how long does it last? It's another issue. That's not tonight's topic.
Now, there's a couple, isn't there a couple wells right in that area already? Not very deep, I assume?
They're not very deep, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to use the stuff I know something about. Maybe we did the hydrogeology on the board well. We worked on well 6 that were blue in the face. We've done the hydro on the cane well. We got all the Snyder stuff on well 8. That's the stuff I know about.
So do you know the quality of those wells that are there already? The quality of the water?
Oh,
okay. Any other questions by council? Okay, thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your time. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you all.
Okay, 4.2 ordinance amending OMC 11.02.02 sales tax revenue. So I guess the question for the council is, do we leave it alone as it is? Or do you want to move forward? Who wants to open the discussion?
My recommendation, well, what I think should be done, it should just be left alone. That money, that 0.5%, should go into the line item that says that we've just been putting $460,000 and to show where that money is.
Okay. I've been taking a good close look at this too, and I made some comments at our last meeting that I did appreciate the council, what they did back then, because it did give us a valuable tool to work with today. But this is 27 years later, and we need to rework that tool. And I got in and checking on that ordinance, and I went back and read all of 1985's, every one of the meetings. It was a council passed ordinance. It was ordinance number 718, and it was a 0.5-cent increase on tax. And it was due to particular streets, and they even list the streets out here at that same meeting when they passed 718, which was on May 13th of 1985. They were discussing Broadway Avenue,
Main to Juniper,
First Street, Main to Juniper, Main Street, Broadway to 4th, Main Street, 4th to 7th. And these were the primary streets that they were addressing when they passed that 0.5-cent tax on that. Yes, I don't agree how they did it, because they brought it up in one meeting without public hearing, and they council had the right to do that. There was a lot of discussion after that particular meeting. There at the next several meetings. In fact, there was a citizen's petition that was filed May 28th. Mayor Case informed council that a formal request for petition to the sales tax ordinance was received by the clerk. That was a petition filed by citizens. Later in that meeting, Mayor Case explained, and this is in the minutes, reference under sales tax ordinance. Mayor Case explained, and Blythe Call confirmed, that it is illegal for council to earmark that money for specific purpose past this year. That hit me right there after that year. So I want to ask our attorney in just a minute if she knows anything about that. Also going on that petition on to June 10th of 1985, under the sales tax resolution ordinance of intent, the attorney makes another comment. City Attorney Blythe Call stated her opinion that after consulting with AWC on this, Blythe Call stated her opinion after consulting with AWC was that the council could not bind future councils by passing an ordinance, because of any ordinance can be repealed. I caught a couple things out of this, that after that year that we couldn't earmark those funds by law, and that any council, future council, could change it after that. I don't see this as diverting funds. It's given us a better tool, and I think we could use a better tool to actually help finance the street department and use our funds wisely through that. Because of that meeting on June 10th, though, to get the petition pulled off the board, that's when council passed Resolution 722, which states that the absent sales tax would be used for streets, and there would be a street improvement plan.
Any other discussion by council? Mike, did you want to share a few things, or?
I don't know if council has any questions or anything that they would like me to reiterate on or anything else. I'd be more than happy to.
We have one slot here, right?
Okay.
I'm kind of in the air on this thing too, because if it's stated what we do with it, and we're turning around, we're using more money in that fund than we're actually dedicated with your $660,000 or whatever that supposedly that tax generates, and we're supposedly putting more money than that into that particular street fund. Now, granted, when that money comes from the state, whatever it is, that 1%, I'm not talking the half percent, I'm talking about 1%, when that comes from the state, when it comes to us, we technically put that in the general fund. At least I think that's where it goes. And then we designate that and break it back out. If the half percent goes to the street fund, basically that's where it goes. Yeah, it says we only did $460,000. But if you look at the rest of it, it can also be used in that, which would actually make your $660,000 of the total amount. It doesn't specifically say when you have to put that money out of that general fund from that portion. You can do that any time during that year, or hold it back that year and do it the following year. It doesn't specifically say that's what you have to do with that money. All it says, it comes from the state, It's that much money. It comes into our general fund. We distribute it back out to whatever fund it goes to, whether it's for gas tax or whether it's whatever. They give you a lump sum, and then you designate that and bring it back out. So I don't know where you're at. Yeah, yes, maybe technically you take that 0.5%, put it in the street. But if you look at the figures and the facts, you've actually put more than that in each year than that $660,000. So, I don't know. Help me, Mike.
Yeah, that's the analysis. There's no question about it. I mean, I could put a chart up if you want it, if you'd like to see it. All right, it was included in the packet. If you'd like me to put it up and talk about it, I could do that.
Like Ken Kaler says, the difference is it's earmarked on paper in front of you visually that this is what is put in there. Nobody gives us concessions for the amount of money that actually goes in there. And you know, I'm on the fence too, because it's a sticky situation. But you know, regardless, I feel whatever the decision is, it'll be the right decision. You know, we also got to look at the fact that the citizens of this community elect all of us to do a job and be supportive in the decisions that are made. Just like citizens represent themselves, we also represent the citizens.
Do I hear a motion? No motion, stays as it is.
I would like to address with the attorney on the statement that Blythe Call made, that particular ordinance that you cannot earmark that money after the particular year. This was May 28th of 1985. I could give you the minutes from that meeting.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to make two comments. First, in response to that specific question about the then city attorney's comment, I'm not aware tonight of what the premise for that opinion was, and so I would need to take a look at that. But in terms of the policy decision that was made by the city council 27 years ago, the other comment made by the city attorney that council in 1985 could not legally bind future councils to that policy decision is very accurate, as I'm sure you're aware. The expression of the policy in that ordinance that established the internal self-imposed mandate to use those sales tax revenues for streets in the city of Othello was simply a self-imposed policy decision, a choice made by the City Council 27 years ago in response to whatever the concerns were at the time. Future councils, as the policy-setting governing body, have the ability legally to change policies to fit current needs, to fit current agendas in terms of what the future holds for the City of Othello and how those funds need to be expended. I will say that imposing a restriction on one of the few revenue sources that is free money in terms of there being no restrictions on how that money is expended is unusual in my experience to see a council make a decision to impose a restriction. You are aware that you get lots of different revenues from different sources that come to you with strings attached. The sales tax revenue is one of the few revenue sources that comes to you with no restrictions. And so if the council were to decide that 27 years later they needed to remove that previously council-imposed restriction on the use of those funds, it could do so. That's, I think, what the attorney then was trying to say, was that, yes, this council in 1985 can make this policy decision to restrict the use of those funds for streets only, but be aware future councils have the legal ability to make a different policy decision on that issue and can essentially reverse your decision and do what they want. No different than my advice to you tonight, if you decided to make a change, the council, after the next election, could make its own decision to reverse your decision tonight. That's the nature of elected officials. That's the nature of city business. The one constant is that there will be change. That's the one thing we always know we can count on. So trying to predict 27 years later whether or not the decision in 1985 is going to meet the needs of the city of Othello in 2012, there was no way for them to know, just as there's no way for you to predict 27 years in the future what a future council might do with your decision tonight. Your job is to make the best decision considering the business needs of the city of Othello as it stands in 2012. And that's what I would encourage you to focus on when you make a decision on whether or not you want to change existing policy set by the previous council or whether you wish to make new policy based upon what you feel are the needs of the city of Othello today.
And I think that's where we're at. I mean, our business ain't to take that half-cent sales tax away from the streets and let our streets dilapidate. I mean, our job is to look at the funding that we got and work with it and do the best repairs we can and keep our streets up. We are constantly adding new streets, too. We've had quite a bit added in the last couple of years. And unfortunately, at the dollar that we're receiving now, it ain't going to keep up. Right now, even with that supposedly half-cent sales tax, which would have been about $660,000, we were still short a whole bunch on funding that street fund. Currently, right now, the utility sales tax is helping funding that by the bond on our Main Street and Broadway that we did a few years ago. The utility tax is also funding that street fund also. My intentions ain't to divert this into any other place. It's to help so we can manage and do our budgeting a lot better to improve the streets that we got and find the areas and the money that we need to improve those. I think it would help on managing it a lot better. It would give us a lot more clear and accurate picture, I think, on the monies that we have too for the following years to work with.
I'll revert back to it's still about the verbiage, because the figure that goes into this is still greater than the $660,000 or whatever it was this last year, the exact figure. It's the language. It's what makes, you know, Joe Blow happy. That's what it boils down to. Who's going to be happy today? You know, this guy. So not everybody's going to come out of here happy. We knew that. It's just the way it is. That's life. So I believe we should look into the verbiage, maybe not earmarking, but maybe coming back with the language of, since it comes from the general fund, stating that the equal portion of what we are allocated for that half cent be noted as that going into the streets. And I think we should look into that, because like I said, what we are giving is more and, you know, greater amount. So why not? Maybe make everybody happy, a little bit happy anyway. Half a smile for everybody. Even Sean, half a smile for Sean. You know, and if that's where we're at, because I truly don't believe that's, we're not changing what we both believe in as concerned citizens and council, mayor, but it'd be a different story if we were talking, we're earmarking set amount and we're not spending set amount. That's not the case. The case is set amount is not going to be enough. Next year, not going to be enough, and the year after, and the year after that. We all know what oil's doing. It's ridiculous, okay? Well, asphalt's an oil-based product. So guess what? That's not going to get any cheaper. So I think we should look into the verbiage and how things are written to maybe see what we can come up with there. That would be my recommendation.
If council wants to do?
Yes.
We can bring something to the next workshop if you want to talk some more about it. Yes?
Would that be?
Good. We can sure do that. Okay. Thank you. Okay, 4.3, ordinance establishing transportation benefit district. Damon?
Everybody's seen the PowerPoint about four times, so we're going to skip that and talk about what the consideration is before the council, and that is the adoption of the ordinance. I wanted to pick out a few things and identify those to you. Remember, what we're doing here is just creating a transportation benefit district. There's no decision on $20 or 0.2% or any of that. It's just creating an authority to look at a revenue source for streets. So that under the recitals, number one, it says the City Council of the City of Othello has the responsibility under the Constitution of the State of Washington for the improvement, maintenance, protection, and operation of public ways within the corporate limits of the City of Othello. So that's your charge. Then I'd like to go, I could read several of them. Number five, Mike, the state transportation plan on page 72 of the state plan establishes unfunded high priorities of statewide significance and includes the need to preserve, maintain, and operate city streets. $6 billion, thereby recognizing that the shortfall in funding to preserve, maintain. And that's a study that the state did statewide on all cities. Number seven, and you have this, you can read them all, but I just wanted to highlight a few. The funding dedicated for the preservation and maintenance of cities' transportation infrastructure has been dramatically reduced due to the changes in Washington state laws. There are several I'd like to read, but let's go to 13. I would like to identify to the council that not only on March 26, as identified in 13, did the City Council hold a public hearing, but you also held one on April 23rd, which we need to add to this ordinance, if you're considering adopting it. I would like to go back to the Othello Chapter 3.3, and that's after the ordinance, Mike, so keep flipping up. There you go. This is the codified version of the ordinance into the Othello Transportation Benefit District. There are several things that the law says you must have in this, and I just want to highlight those for your consideration. On 3.30010, establishing Transportation Benefit District, there's created a Transportation Benefit District to be known as the Othello Transportation Benefit District, or district, with geographical boundaries comprised of the corporate limits of the city. That's one thing that you have to do, is establish the boundaries as they currently exist, or they may be amended or with future annexations. A, under 020, the governing board of the Transportation Benefit District shall be the Othello City Council. That's the second thing that must be in your ordinance. And down to B, the treasurer of the Transportation Benefit District shall be the city finance director or officer. That's another thing, that's a third thing that's required to be in the ordinance. D, the board shall issue an annual report pursuant to the requirements. That's the fourth thing. And 3.3030, the district board may authorize a vehicle tax fee up to $20. Again, that was not increased to 40. We talked about that early last spring. It remains at 20. Any expansion of the authorized purpose of the district shall be undertaken only after notice and hearing and adoption of an ordinance in accordance with RCW 3673. I'd like to go back to 040, Mike. Again, you have this in your entirety, 3.30040. And again, I just want to bring your attention to certain items. We're talked about the transportation improvements funded, and I'm not going to read all of those, but the funds generated by the Transportation Benefit District may be used for transportation improvements that preserve, maintain, and operate the existing transportation infrastructure of the city consistent with the requirements of 36.73. Those are all the noted requirements for the RCW in the ordinance, then codified into our 3.3 OMC. The question tonight is, do you want to create the Transportation Benefit District? And if so, then you would need to adopt this ordinance, and you have met the criteria to do that.
Questions? Discussion?
I don't know how we cannot pass this because the state is tying money to the Transportation Benefit District. We've heard that already. So they want us to do everything we can before they start helping us as much as they used to. So
I agree with regardless of the direction that we go, mm-hmm. This has to be done. I mean, we might as well take the $460,000 and throw it out the window that we're talking about in the other discussion if we don't pass this, because we won't be able to pave anything later on down the road without the state's assistance.
Yeah, I believe as city council, we have an obligation to pass this because we will not be eligible, or we will be bumped down the list of eligibility for grant monies, which we are going to need in order to maintain our streets at the level we would like them to be maintained at. And it just doesn't make any sense not to pass it.
There's no secret. Small communities rely on state assistance.
You know,
we're not Bellevue. We're not Seattle. We don't have that tax base. So
again, I think this is one of those valuable tools that we as a council are kind of obligated to set up for our councils in the future to work with, and I think this would be a great tool in the future for the funding of our streets. At this time, we're not passing any new tax, we're just creating a transportation district board, and this board would be the one that would be looking at priority on the streets and the funding for it, and I think it would be a valuable tool for this council to help get the work done and get the streets that we need done on a timely manner.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I think this is the first step we got to do. Like you say, the state are pushing this pretty hard. We got to at least make this district, and then what we do with it from there, which direction we go, it has to be done before we can take it out to the people to vote on it, whatever they want to do with it. So this is the first step. I don't think we've got any choice.
I make a motion to approve the TBD.
I'll second.
Okay, Charles first, Gina second. Any further questions or discussion?
You got it.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same?
Aye.
One opposed? Okay. We have one opposed by Eugene. Okay. All right. Moving on to unfinished business. New business? Any new business? Okay, mayor's announcements. Can the Finance Committee, Darrow, Johnson, and Snyder meet at noon on Wednesday with staff to discuss a new finance officer? Is that possible for the three of you? Darrow, Johnson, and Snyder? Yes?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, good.
We tried to get lifeguards to open the pool last weekend. However, lifeguards were not available. So if you're wondering why it wasn't open, we couldn't gather enough to staff the pool. So, and also in office, if you're interested in, there's tickets for $16 for the 4 days instead of 20 for the fair coming up. If you'd like to join in with the city staff that's going to purchase tickets, just let us know and we'll put you on the list. Any other things before I close the meeting? Ken?
I'd like to be excused from the workshop on September 4th.
Okay, good. I heard where you're going. That's great. Anybody else? Charles?
In regards to that workshop, I'd like to know if it's a heavy, like if it's a, what's on the agenda as soon as I can.
But today when I looked, there were four items on the agenda, and I can't remember a single one right now. It did look too heavy. It's all information.
Okay. In regards to that, if it was real light, could we move it? Because it's a holiday on that Monday, if we could move it to the actual meeting.
Paul.
If those items.
Yeah, I did look at the next one up. I think if it's the desire of council, we could combine the two and not have the meeting on the 4th. Just go to the 10th.
Yeah, if it's a real light workshop.
I think we could combine the 10th and the 4th.
The council wants to do?
Sure.
So do we need to have a motion to cancel the meeting? Do I hear a motion to cancel the September, is it on the 4th?
4th.
For the 4th, I hear a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Charles,
second.
Okay.
Second.
Gina, second. Any further question or discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Oh.
I guess I don't have to be.
Nope, not anymore. Nope. Okay, opposed, the same? Okay, then that passes. Anything else?
Oh, okay. I do have one.
Oh.
I'd like to see if Eamon can set up a Park and Rec meeting in the near future. Park and Rec committee meeting in the near future?
Yeah, as soon as we get the numbers together for the recap from the pool season, then we'll schedule the next meeting.
Okay, sooner the better, because I know there's been a lot of interest in our park usage for next year.
Okay.
So you...
Good.
About 2 weeks, does that work?
That'll work.
A couple weeks.
Yeah. Anything else? Okay, then this meeting is adjourned. Thank you everybody for coming and sharing.